Judge Schmidt, Judge Johnson, Judge Larkin. The Honorable John Schmidt presiding.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is March 12th. We have three cases on for argument today and one case that will be cited on the briefs without argument. The first case, we have an attorney present. Mr. Dressel, I understand that you had thought that you were going to argue today. My apologies for any communication mix-up that may have happened, but we just allow attorneys to argue. And so for the appellant's counsel, the podium adjusts. You will have 15 minutes for your argument, and I will ask the clerk, the marshal, to call the first case.
Now calling A241166, Daniel Elizabeth Dressel versus Nathan David Dressel.
May it please the court. My name is John Burns, and I represent the appellant, Danielle Dressel. The parties in this case were divorced on October 2nd, 2020. And at that time, they stipulated to joint legal and joint physical custody with an equal parenting schedule. 4 months later, Mr. Dressel commenced a change of custody action, which ultimately resulted in the court retaining joint legal custody but awarding Mr. Dressel sole physical custody for 1 year. In its order dated April 28, 2022, the court created various conditions for Ms. Dressel. She complied with each and every condition, and the parties enjoyed improved communication and cooperation. After the 1 year custody award had expired, Ms. Dressel moved the court to return the parties to the joint physical custody and equal parenting schedule that they had agreed upon in their decree. That request was denied originally, but scheduled to be reviewed at a hearing in the fall of 2023. The night before the hearing, the parenting consultant made a decision without consulting with Ms. Dressel and sent a copy to the court. In this decision, the parenting consultant made a number of new allegations against Ms. Dressel, that she engaged in deceptive behavior, that the children's therapist had told her that Ms. Dressel was influencing the children negatively against their father, that Mr. Dressel's, and as a result, that Ms. Dressel's parenting time should be completely suspended for 90 days. The district court shortened and then ultimately eliminated that blackout period, but then they denied Ms. Dressel's request for an evidentiary hearing and relied on the PC's report to deny her request to return to the joint physical custody.
Counsel, as I understand it, the sole issue on appeal is whether or not the district court reversibly erred by not allowing your client to cross-examine the parenting consultant regarding the report that was submitted to the court. Is that correct?
It's the both the parenting consultant and the therapist.
The therapist.
That is correct.
The your brief seems to acknowledge that there is no case or rule of procedure that required the district court to allow cross-examination. Is that correct?
It is in general, because there's no law specific to the parenting consultant. But what I analogize it to is that it is a due process right when it's a custody determining opinion that is generated.
Okay.
And that's the comparison that I've made.
So you cite due process, so I presume you mean procedural due process,
correct,
right? So you're saying that there is a procedural due process right to cross-examine the PC in this,
yes,
context.
Yes.
We normally apply the factors set forth in Matthews v. Eldridge when determining whether or not there's been a due process violation that,
yes,
necessitates relief from a court. I see you don't cite that standard in your briefing. Have you considered that standard and how it would apply here?
I have not. What I focused on is the fact that the decision, and again, what's critical about it, is that the parenting consultant provides the basis for the court at that fall 2023 hearing to say, based upon this new evidence, I am going to deny the request to change custody. The
okay,
only
but
evidence.
Counsel, let me stop you. There was no guarantee that the district court was going to revert back to joint physical custody.
There was no guarantee. That's correct.
The court said, I'll look at this again in a year and see if anything has changed that would convince me to go back to joint physical custody.
The focus has to be on where we were at that point in the year, the present circumstances. But you are correct. In an odd sort of order, the 1 year temporary award, and then I'm going to look at it at that point. So that is correct.
So you acknowledge that we determine generally whether or not there's a due process violation justifying relief from the court by applying the Matthews v. Eldridge factors, but you're not relying on those factors.
I don't believe that we get to those factors. The fact is that when there is a custody determining opinion, as we have here, and these are the new factors, it's a hearsay, I talked to the therapist, and here's what the therapist told me. Here's some other allegations that I'm going to present to the court.
Okay, let me ask this, because what I'm struggling with is there is an accepted method of determining whether or not there's been a due process violation, and you seem to be conceded that under that accepted method, you lose. So you're saying there's this other due process right to cross-examine the PC and therapist. What is your legal authority? I mean, you just can't say we've got a due process right to do this. What's your legal authority for that proposition?
The Constitution and the due process in the 14th Amendment, as I lay out.
And as we understand that
right.
and apply it, we do it under an existing legal framework. What other framework are you suggesting we use if it's not Matthews v. Eldridge?
In our brief, beginning on page 3, I lay out the basis that we're relying upon. And what it goes to is the fact that, as I indicated earlier, this court has not had a case where a parenting consultant was creating custody-determining conclusions that the court relied upon.
But the court specifically said the parenting consultant does not have authority to make custody recommendations. I believe, is that in statute?
The
statute delineating what a parenting consultant may and may not do?
It is. And there's also a contract.
So the statute says you can't make custody determinations, you can't make custody recommendations, parenting consultant. You're conceding the contract in this case says parenting consultant can't make custody recommendations. And the district court acknowledged that the parenting consultant could not make custody determinations and didn't treat the parenting consultant's recommendation as to custody determination. I mean, how do we write an opinion saying this was a recommendation for a custody change or against a custody change and treat it that way?
There's only one source that the court had for the basis that it relied upon to deny the change of custody. So you can have that statute, you can have that contract, but the reality is the only source that came in the night before the hearing was this parenting consultant's report, and that is what the court relied upon.
Okay, let's do it this way. It seems to me that the Matthews v. Eldridge formula works very well here.
Mm-hmm.
Does your client have a protected constitutional right to the care and custody of her children?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes.
What was the procedure used? The district court here said, I already had a 5-7 day hearing. I said I was going to review this. I've received hundreds of pages of documents. I've also received mother's arguments as to why certain things she has said in communications were taken out of context. She provided the entire context.
Yes.
And the district court said, having read the entire context, it doesn't change my view of where I think mother is at. In fact, it probably reinforces my view. So, you know, the rest of the Eldridge factors look at, you know, what was the risk of erroneous deprivation of the right and what additional procedures would have been provided to eliminate that risk. So it seems like all the information we need to apply those factors is here. And as you indicated, you end up with the conclusion that it doesn't violate due process in the way that we typically analyze due process.
If the court had stopped with the evidence that had been presented up till that day, I agree that if
so
I...
So what evidence do you assert that mother would have presented that would have shown that, you know, additional procedural safeguards in the form of cross-examination
right.
would have... changed the outcome or eliminated the risk of an erroneous deprivation of her rights.
That this parenting consultant had an obvious bias, that she had been reversed multiple times, that Ms. Dressel had moved to have her taken off the case, that there was never a conversation that she actually had with the therapist, that was contrived, and that cross-examination would have exposed the true motivations of this parenting consultant. All of those could have happened.
Did Mother argue all of those things to the district court in terms of the relief that the district court should grant? I mean, didn't Mother ask this district court judge to remove the parenting consultant? It seems to me that the district court judge was very well aware of your parents' concerns about the bias of the parenting consultant,
sure,
the desire to have the parenting consultant removed, and Mother's presentation of the facts that would contradict the parenting consultant.
I don't believe that at that hearing in the fall that that was an issue before the court. There had been a previous request to remove the parenting consultant.
But when Mother argued to the district court, I want the right to cross-examine the parenting consultant about this last-minute report, were these the arguments she gave the court?
We weren't given an opportunity to make those arguments. On our motion for amended findings, we brought up arguments, but not at that time. At that time, it literally came in the night before. We demanded the opportunity for cross-examination and to have the evidentiary hearing, and the court denied it. And it's our position that when they are custody-determining opinions and when the court relies upon it, and that's my critical distinction, Your Honor, is that I'm saying—
Mr. Burns, and is there any rule of court that applies on that point? In other words, when you filed your motion for amended findings, I'm kind of curious whether you considered invoking a rule rather than the constitutional right.
We asked, so there had been discussion, and at one point the court had said, well, if I'm going to give you an evidentiary hearing, then your client has to pay for it. And we said that we were fine with that. So we had requested the evidentiary hearing. As I set forth in our brief, the basis for it was the constitutional right to face your accuser, right to get to the basis of what is these.
I understand that. Are there any procedural rules that if, you know, either apply or are, you know, closely on point or nearly on point?
Well, we did not provide the court with any procedural rules that would mandate a hearing for a parenting consultant, because as I conceded to the other member of the bench here, that is a new issue. But it is our position that acting in this capacity, they certainly have shifted the parenting consultant to an advocate role in what she's recommending, that creates the basis for our needing to cross-examine and look into this further.
The case law that you rely on involves a custody evaluation report, and I think also a report from a county social services agency. So
it does.
Yeah. And I mean, there are differences between those persons and roles on the one hand and a parenting consultant on the other hand, correct?
Well, there are. And I would posit that in both of those other situations, you'd try to get both sides of the story. You would not make a report and a recommendation based only on what, in this case, Father told you, and allegedly the therapist also indicated, never checking with Mom, never doing anything else. And I think that's why the court ultimately reduced this draconian 90-day blackout and said, I'm not going to do that. That's too far. But you know what? I am going to rely upon these new concerns that are identified in this report, and I'm going to deny the request to change the custody back to what the parties agreed upon after the 1 year had expired. It's for that reason that we are here today requesting an order from this court that reverses the decision on custody and remands the case back to give Ms. Dressel an opportunity to cross-examine the PC and the therapists on their custody determining opinions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. With that, the case is submitted, and we will get an opinion issued within the statutory time frame. Given that our next case starts at 10:05, we're going to take a short recess, and we will be back at 10:05 to hear that case.
All rise.
As I was working on all that, I'm working with the Minnesota boards.